This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Back up and running and ready to talk with Grace Rayner of The Athletic, because she has far more compelling information than I can provide at this juncture in the morning. Wouldn't you agree?
100%. And it's always great to have Grace back. And as she told us during the break, had her feet up, glass of wine, looked for a nice quiet evening, and lo and behold, the Trevor Lawrence COVID-19 story breaks and was back to work again. Grace, this is a monster story in college football. It's not just a player, it's the player. And for everything that he has meant to the game, especially this year, as far as social and racial issues, not to mention his play, engaged, great player. I mean, we'll go through all the accolades, but this is a humongous story. But again, welcome to COVID-19 in 2020, right?
For sure. I mean, I think we would all agree Trevor Lawrence is college football right now. He is not only the face of Clemson, but the face of this sport. And just 3 days ago on Tuesday afternoon, we're talking to him at Clemson and he gets asked about the virus. And he says in a message that is probably pretty chilling with a foreshadowing, he says, you know, at some point, this virus is probably more likely than not going to affect one of us and is going to hit our team. And then obviously 48 hours later, we find out he is positive.
Grace, what else do we know, though, as far as contact tracing? I know there's tests today. Again, I'm sure we'll get more information as the day goes on, the next 24 hours. But what do we know now? We know about Trevor, but what about the rest of the team?
We don't know a ton. We do know that they traditionally test on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So as you said, today is going to be a crucial day of testing for Clemson. We do know that Trevor lives alone, and so that will help in terms of contact tracing with potential roommates. And then we know that Clemson has had a plan in meetings in terms of isolation and masks and 6 feet. And so I think that we'll get more clarity as we find out what happens with these tests that are being administered today. But certainly Trevor not having roommates on the team, I think, is positive for Clemson for sure.
And I'm sure you, like everybody else, started working backwards that, hey, we know the BC game's affected. But and listen, if you follow college football, you can't help yourself about November the 7th with Clemson at Notre Dame, assuming both can take care of business tomorrow and what it sets up for next week. But almost everybody immediately said, all right, what's the ACC protocol, right? Everybody started looking at the fine print going, 10 days, you start doing the math. Do we know? Was it on a Tuesday? Was it on a Wednesday? Was it Thursday when that 10 days begins?
That is the million-dollar question. And I think that what is so important here is, when did Trevor's symptoms begin? We know that he has symptoms. He said he has relatively mild symptoms. Dabo Swinney has said he had symptoms. We know the test was administered Wednesday. So 10 days from Wednesday is obviously Saturday, the November 7th day. But if he started showing symptoms maybe Monday, maybe Tuesday, then he's potentially looking at that isolation 10-day period being up Thursday or Friday. But then he also has to go through a very thorough cardiac evaluation. So when the symptoms started, I think, is going to be key here in giving us some clarity about what exactly this timeline might look like.
All right, let's fast forward the clock one day to tomorrow. It's Clemson. It's BC. DJ, in all likelihood, is going to get the nod in terms of, hey, next man up. What do you expect to see from the Tigers tomorrow afternoon?
You know, I think, first of all, this is why you recruit, right? I mean, DJ was the number one quarterback in the class of 2020 by the 24/7 Sports Composite. Clemson has very much operated as if he is their quarterback of the future. And now the future is here just a little earlier than they expected. But, you know, DJ's a big kid. He's 6'4", 250 pounds. He doesn't have a ton of experience in 5 games. I think he's only played just over 50 snaps. And he's 12 of 19 passing for about 100 yards. But I expect that Travis Etienne is going to be carrying a bigger load moving forward, the senior running back. And I think that Clemson will rally around DJ. I mean, he's a super talented kid. He's been compared to Trevor and Deshaun Watson in terms of just processing things. And I think he'll be ready. We know that he was injured against Miami, but he did play against Syracuse, which was definitely a positive development for Clemson last week before all of this unfolded this week.
You know, the last couple games, Travis Etienne, when there's all this buildup about he's going to break Ted Brown's record, and everybody just assumed, hey, you'll snap your fingers, he's going to do it. He really has been relatively quiet for his standard. the last couple of weeks. And you mentioned maybe a larger workload. You got to figure that Clemson's going to lean on him. And you've also got to figure that BC, Jeff Hafley, after seeing Clemson at the Fiesta Bowl, goes, hey, wait a minute now. You take Trevor out of the gig. Hey, we know nine's dangerous. I'm just going to load the box here and say, hey, beat me if you can throwing the football.
For sure. I mean, we all saw what Travis did when Clemson was in a precarious situation 2 years ago with the Syracuse game. Trevor was knocked out at that point. They just handed off to him. He has a career day. For sure. I think his load is going to be all the more crucial moving forward. And I think we've already seen defenses put an emphasis on stopping him and trying to stop the run. And Dabo Swinney has had to answer questions about his offensive line in the run game. But Travis is a guy, as we all know, he doesn't really need much. If you just give him a little hole, he is insanely productive after contact. He is probably the most explosive player I've ever seen. And so I fully expect that definitely Saturday, maybe into next week too, we're going to see a lot of Travis Etienne in a heavier load.
Do you remember a time in recent years that Clemson's been as banged up as they are? I mean, we're sitting here talking about Trevor, and obviously so it's the headline story in college football right now. But defensively, they are really nicked up. I don't remember a time I've seen so many prominent names on, hey, day-to-day, hope he's coming back soon, whatever the case may be for Clemson.
I can't remember a time, no. I mean, we know Clemson's going to be without James Skalski, the middle linebacker, for multiple games. He's got a groin injury. Mike Jones Jr., the nickel Sam linebacker, is day-to-day. Tyler Davis, we're not sure what the situation is there. He's a starting defensive tackle. Justin Foster, starting defensive end, has been out all year. Darian Kendrick didn't play last week, starting cornerback. I mean, it's just, you're right, they are just really nicked up top to bottom on this defense, which you're right. Obviously, Trevor is the headline story, but this team is definitely working through some other things right now as well.
The flip side, too, is from a Boston College standpoint, you got to figure that, hey, we're playing with house money. I mean, nobody really expected a whole lot from BC this season. Jeff Hafley's rolled in there and has done a tremendous job. They've won four games already. They've almost changed the culture, it seems like, overnight in the sense that, hey, we can throw the football. I mean, you're so used to seeing BC line up and pound you with big physical backs. They can still do that with David Bailey. But now with Jurkovic coming in and throwing it all over the yard, they are a much different beast than years past under Steve Adazio.
For sure, and I think they have probably one of, if not the best tight ends that Clemson's going to see all year, and that was something that Dabo Swinney talked at length about this week. But you're right, they are playing with house money. And really anyone, when you play Clemson in the regular season and the gap is as big as it is between Clemson and everyone else, you really are playing with house money, especially you come on the road, you've got nothing to lose if you're a Boston College team. But I know Dabo Swinney has been extremely complimentary of, like you were saying, the job Jeff Hafley has done, just the way things are going up there. And every single year, this is a tough, gritty, physical game. I'm excited to see what this new look BC team looks like underneath him.
You know, the one thing I've gathered to from talking to Dabo on a weekly basis is they never seem to panic, right? And again, listen, they've had great success. They win. It seems like every single time they step on the field, but there never is a sense of panic with them. And Dabo's always preached, hey, we're the standard. You know, we play to what we do. If we do what we're supposed to do, we'll be okay. This may be the ultimate test, doesn't it? It just feels that way. I mean, you got the big game with Notre Dame next week that everybody's buzzing about. He didn't want to hear about it. He wants to take care of BC this week. But this is really, you know, adversity hits everybody at some point in time. Seems like Clemson right now is at the crossroads at that stage.
For sure. I mean, Dabo Swinney has said multiple times he's joked about how he has a glass case in his office that says shatter if necessary, you know, when things go wrong, and then that's where his plan is going to be if Clemson has something that major happens. This is that time. It's now shatter if necessary time. Trevor Lawrence, your starting quarterback, is not going to be playing this week. And so I think Clemson has had a plan all season long for something potentially going wrong. Dabo Swinney is one of the most organized people I think I've ever met in my entire life. So you knew he was going to have a plan regardless. But I think you're right. Every single week, Clemson's mentality is that Clemson is playing Clemson. They focus on themselves more than they focus on their opponent. And I think this will be the ultimate test of, okay, first of all, can your second stringers, beat an ACC team? And what does that plan look like? We know that you have it.
We've also seen the second and third teamers struggle. In fact, Dabo, we even talked about it, I think, after the Georgia Tech game in which everybody played and they scored. He just wanted to see the next man up produce. Because prior to that game a couple of weeks ago, Grace, quite frankly, you really didn't see a whole lot from the second and third teamers in terms of putting points on the board. And I know that had to be a concern because you saw that in the Georgia Tech game. That really comes into play, though, moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, Dabo told his team at halftime, okay, this is where our team needs to grow. This is where we need to get better, is in building this depth and in these backups coming in and there not being a drop-off. And you're right. We saw the backups struggle. They got shut out in the second half against the Citadel. We saw them struggle against Wake Forest. But they really did turn the page against Georgia Tech. I think that that was a huge emphasis, you know, that entire week. And just as Clemson continues to build depth, Dabo always says, good teams get better as the season goes on. But yeah, now, especially with DJ, I mean, this isn't backup time anymore. This is, all right, this is your starting job. Here you go. You're a true freshman. The DJ Uiagalelei era, so to speak, is starting a little earlier than we thought.
As far as news goes, though, for the rest of the day, is there a scheduled press conference or a release, or are we going to just have to wait till tomorrow until we get more results back as far as the testing goes?
You know, I don't know how they'll decide to handle it. Typically what happens is about 2 hours before kickoff on Saturdays, we get a list of unavailable players. So I anticipate that's what Clemson will do again this weekend, but certainly a big, big day of testing in Clemson for sure.
All right, before we let you go and get back to business, we have some fun today given the fact that Halloween is tomorrow and we've been going through all these candies. Wes apparently froze up again down in Georgia, so he couldn't join this interview. Wes had Chico Stick as one of his top three, which is catching, I'm sure, all kinds of love on social media. So would you like to unveil your top three as far as Halloween candy goes?
Sure. I will go. Number one, Kit Kat. I like to put them in the fridge, get them nice and cold. Just, you can't beat it. Two, for the sake of balance, Skittles. I like to have that, you know, kind of fruity, chocolatey balance. And then three, I would say there's no such thing as Halloween without ruining your teeth. So I will go Milk.
Now, by the way, first mention of Milk Duds so far on these lists.
Really?
And yeah, and Charles Snowden, who joined us earlier, we interviewed him yesterday. We played it today. He also had Skittles in his top three. So I think he was going with you with a, hey, you go with a little chocolate. You got to balance it out with a little fruitiness over there on the side, whatever the case may be. But the first Milk Dud mentioned so far. So that's cool to see.
Wow.
Yeah, you got it. Well, listen, keep up the great work. I know last night was nuts for everybody that covers the Tigers. And just keep doing the great stuff there at The Athletic. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. Y'all have a good one.
All right, be good. There's Grace Rayner from The Athletic.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, no Durham, frozen in time in Cartersville, Georgia. We'll try to get my partner back here before the end of the show. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. In case you missed it, though, yesterday Scott Satterfield, the head football coach at Louisville, joined us. They, of course, have the Hokies coming to town. First time they've met since they've been members of the ACC. And the first question that was thrown to Coach was, you know what, I believe that coaches have a chance to coach even harder after big wins like Florida State.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, no question about it. It was a great, great win for us and our guys, and a much-needed win. You know, guys have been putting a lot of work in this year. We have not seen a lot of the fruit of all the hard work, but we put it in this past weekend, and it was a great win, and hopefully that'll, you know, transition us into a lot of great things over the second half of this season.
Coach, I know a lot of folks are talking about what you did with Florida State. I'm going to take you back a week prior to that. I thought your effort against Notre Dame is what really – grabbed my attention, because it would have been really easy, given what was going on, to say, oh, my goodness, we're going to Notre Dame. We're going to get waxed. Let's get this thing moving and people zoning out. Hey, that was a football game. I mean, Notre Dame, to their credit, goes the last 7:55 to play keep away from you. But, hey, you went on the road playing a really good, tough team. You didn't turn the ball over. Your defense tackled, which I know has been kind of an issue, holding people off the scoreboard. But, you know, the Florida State thing, to me, started before you kicked it off against Florida State. I just thought your effort against Notre Dame kind of set the tone for hopefully the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great game. I think it really started probably the week before that. You know, I thought we came out on that Sunday and just had a great week. I mean, and like you mentioned, I mean, it could have been real easy just to kind of throw the towel in, say, hey, we're going to play a top five team, Notre Dame, and on the road. And we've been on the road the whole month, I feel like, that stretch. And the guys had a great week and then really came out there and played well on that game day. Notre Dame obviously is a really good football team, good defense. They play keep away very, very well. But I think it did. It started that week, and then we continued on last week. We came back with a great week, and I thought we played obviously our most complete game against Florida State all the way around, offense, defense, scored points. We held them out of the end zone. Really, really good week for us. And this week's been the same way. I think we've really carried it on, and I think we have that momentum rolling right now, and we're looking forward to getting back out on the game Saturday to play the game.
Sad, it's hard to look at this game on paper as Roddy and Eric and I get ready for it. It's been interesting to have our discussions to get beyond the two running backs of Herbert of Virginia Tech and certainly Javian Hawkins for you guys. But there's also this kind of continuity, this battery, if you will, of the two quarterbacks that go with the running backs. Do you see a little bit of what you do and what they do, I guess? And do you think Fuente's thinking the same thing when he watches tape this week in terms of that quarterback running back combination?
A lot of similarities. It's fun to watch their offense. The quarterback certainly can run the football, but he also can throw. I mean, their play action game is awesome to see. And the running back's been outstanding. I think number one in the country in all purpose, not only running the football, but in the kick return aspect as well. Of outstanding player. Very similar teams. I think what they're doing offensively is just like what we're doing. They run the stretch play. They run the play action off of that. They're not scared to run their quarterback and then play very good, solid defense and kicking game. So yeah, it's very similar as you watch that. I've never played Virginia Tech. I visited there when I was back at App State. Used to go up there and visit Coach Fuente and his staff. They do an outstanding job, and looking forward to playing these guys. It's first time playing the Hokies.
That's where I was going to go with you next, Coach. How difficult is that? I mean, I know everybody changes tape. Everybody sees everybody on television, all that kind of stuff. But it's one thing to play somebody on a semi-consistent basis where you really do have a feel for size, speed, what they do and all that stuff. It's one thing to watch tape. It's another thing to see them up close. So how different is that, given the fact that Louisville and Virginia Tech have never played against each other as ACC members?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I mean, it's kind of like for me last year coming into the league, playing all these teams really, for the first time. You really hadn't seen anybody. You don't have any perspective of size, speed, of what they do well or not, except for what you see on film. And, so this is obviously our first time playing these guys, and I guess maybe in a long time. Maybe I don't even know if we ever played, but. We're looking forward to it. I know they do an outstanding job coaching and historically always been a great football team. It should be a great matchup.
I want to focus a little bit on the other side of the ball because, we've talked about it in the offseason. We've talked about once the season got going. I know the turnover thing has bothered you and it's sidetracked a lot of the momentum you've had in games, maybe even, sequences of those games themselves. But it looks like now, particularly against the pass, your group is starting to kind of sort things out. Where has that development impressed you the most?
Well, yeah, they've done a much better job the last couple of games. I think really the big spot for me is just to tighten up the coverage. I felt like early in the season there are a lot of guys, were basically wide open and quarterbacks at this level are going to be able to throw and catch. And the last couple of weeks we've tightened the coverage up. We've put pressure on the quarterbacks. I think that's been a big key as well. And, of course, that goes hand in hand. The one thing we haven't done great is create those turnovers. I think even this past weekend, we probably should have had at least three more picks in that game. We came away with one turnover, with one interception there by Jack. And we got to do a better job with that. But the last 2 weeks, the guys have held guys out of the end zone. I think that's always key. Our red zone defense has been one of the best in the country. Continue to elevate our play. And the guys are getting more and more comfortable of what we're trying to do defensively. But hopefully we'll continue this trend and keeping guys out of the end zone. We always feel like if we hold guys to field goal attempts, then we got a great chance to win.
That was Scott Satterfield yesterday on Packer and Durham. He talked about the red zone defense. How about the red zone offense for Louisville? 21 of 22 successful scoring drives. 21 of 22, 15 times of those touchdowns. So good game tomorrow for Louisville. They finally snapped their ACC losing streak. They got one big one last week against Florida State. So that's a good thing. They're playing with a lot of confidence. And for Virginia Tech, as I pointed out earlier, must-win situation. If the Hokies are going to get to the ACC title game, man, you gave one away last week in Winston-Salem. You got to take care of business now, and you have to win them all out. You already got two in the loss column. So the Hokies, a lot of pressure on them going on the road. And again, first time Virginia Tech and Louisville hooking up as members of the ACC. For bar bet, by the way, I like to give out bar bets. Louisville now in ACC play, 27 up, 27 down. They break the tie coming up this weekend.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on ACC Network. My partner's still frozen. Let's see if we can get him here before the end of the show. He's on his way for Louisville and Virginia Tech. But right now, we have Miss Kelsey Riggs going to join us on the program. And Kelsey, first thing, it's great having you on the show, number one. Number two, you go from hosting SportsCenter this week to now having to appear on this show. And I must say, it's like a Hallmark snapshot. We got snow in the backdrop. I mean, goodness gracious, does that not feel like fall or what? Unbelievable.
First of all, when I got the text to come on your show, it was by far the highlight of my week. I just want you to know that. Yeah. Second of all, when I knew I was coming on your show and I woke up this morning and I saw that there was snow outside, normally I would just give you like a backdrop inside my house. But it feels like when I come on with you guys, we're usually talking about squirrels or snow or something tragic that's happening where I've lost my car. And so it felt fitting. I felt like the big man upstairs was like, oh, you're going on Packer and Durham. Here's some snow so that you have something to talk about and the guys can make fun of you. So here we are. It's snowing.
It looks great. I mean, that is really a cool backdrop. I got to be honest with you. Now, you got to make the road trip, though, up to Syracuse. You can be able to handle those blizzard up there in the Northeast.
The good news is I rented a Tahoe to drive up there in because I knew that there was a chance of weather. And I mean, Pac, you know, I talked to you guys last time, the last year, the first time it snowed here, and I didn't even want to leave my house. So driving is not my most favorite thing to do in the snow, but people probably up here don't even consider this snow. I think they call it rain. I just call it snow. So yeah, I've got a big car, going to be real slow, side of the road. It'll be good.
All right, you'll be ready to rock on that. All right, let's get to business, though. Initial reaction with the Trevor Lawrence news, testing positive for COVID-19 last night.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of emotions and thoughts that go through your head when you first hear that. First and foremost, you just hope that he's okay. I know that they said mild symptoms, and you hope that that continues and that he feels better quickly. The second thought is you hope that it's an isolated incident and it's just Trevor and that it doesn't spread any further through this Clemson program. I also thought about Syracuse because I'm covering them this week and wanted to check in because that's the team that, you know, they just played. And so you think about those guys who were trying to get to Trevor the whole time last week. And I know that they're being very careful and vigilant and continuing their testing. And the SID said that they've followed ACC protocols and that they've not had any positive tests. So that's good news, too. And then the next thing, Pac, is, I mean, you just think about, OK, what happens next? And you can't help but think about the Notre Dame game coming up, not this week, but next week. But for Clemson right now, it's all about Boston College. I mean, they're a day away from playing a Boston College team that I think is really good. Phil Dracovic is just so incredibly impressive. I've seen them up close and personal twice. I've gotten to talk with Jeff Hafley and a lot of their players quite a bit over the last few weeks. And so this is already a team that I know Clemson was not going to overlook. But I do think that right now, you know, you've just got to focus all in on this Boston College team. And I mean, how many schools have a backup quarterback that's sitting there on the bench that not even just one backup quarterback, but two that are as good as Clemson's backups in that quarterback room? And so, you know, it just speaks to what Dabo Swinney has been able to do to not just have the next man up mentality, but to have viable backups like he does. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how this team responds. But obviously, first and foremost, you just want to see Trevor get healthy as soon as possible and the rest of that Clemson team stay healthy.
Exactly right. But, you know, the flip side of all this, too, is if you're Jeff Hafley, you know, and I mentioned this to Wes earlier, Hey, you saw Clemson when you were at Ohio State last year. You actually saw Trevor Lawrence go for a run, a touchdown run that people still went, wow, dude, 6'6", nobody could catch him. If you're Jeff Hafley with the defensive mastermind that he is, as well as their team is playing offensively, you already have a feel because you've seen Clemson in person. This is not just a new coach that, yeah, I've seen him on tape. He's seen these guys. So I think it really does help Hafley as far as, okay, you take Trevor Lawrence out of the equation. Hey, you know what? My go-to's on D. I got some dudes that can rock you on that side. Let's just go ahead and load the box, and I dare you to beat me. Throw it if you can.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Tim Lukaboo, we've talked to him a lot, their defensive coordinator, and obviously the relationship that he has with Jeff Hafley and his defensive mind, they're on the same page, and what they're doing right now is working. And then you've got two guys in the middle, and Max Richardson and Isaiah McDuffie, who are just, I mean, all over the place, led the nation in tackles. They were number one and two. They're still right up there in the top five. So I agree. It's going to be quite, I think, the battle as you look at the defensive mind that Jeff Hafley has and what he's already been able to do. I mean, this Boston College team, to me, Pac, looks totally different all the way around than they did last year. Obviously, the offense is very different with a quarterback like Phil and what he's able to do. They've now been able to establish the run, which I think has opened things up even more. But you're right, the defensive side is really important, especially when, okay, things are going to be different because now there's no Trevor Lawrence, but they do still have plenty of weapons on Clemson's offensive side.
All right, let's go to the game that you will eventually get there in your Tahoe. It's Syracuse and it's Wake Forest. You know, last week you mentioned Syracuse plays in Death Valley, and you're thinking, yikes, this thing could get out of control. I thought Dino Babers did a tremendous job keeping his guys still dialed in and competitive. That's a six-point game in the third quarter last week in the Valley. There's no doubt his kids were motivated and ready to play, and I thought defensively, which they've actually been pretty good at times throughout the course of the year, I thought they were really encouraging in terms of the sense of, hey, they even quit. I mean, that could have been a 65-3 thing if you weren't careful, but that wasn't the case at all last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look what happened with Clemson and Georgia Tech 2 weeks ago, there were a lot of people, including myself, that said, okay, this could very well be what happens with Syracuse when they go play Clemson as well. And they were able to be in it for three quarters. And when we talked to Dino this week, that's something that he definitely said that they took a lot of pride in. And obviously things got out of hand in the fourth quarter, and that's what good teams like Clemson are able to do, is take care of business no matter how the other three quarters of the game have gone. But there's definitely a lot of positives that Syracuse is able to pull from that. You know, Dino said that those few weeks between Duke and the Liberty game were really tough weeks. Not only did they lose their quarterback, but their running back got hurt. That was when we also found out that Andre Sisco was opting out and he was done for the year on top of those losses. So for them to be able to take those games and come back and then play Clemson and respond in a way they did, where for a while it was close and they did have a shot to be in there. There's a lot of good things that they can take and build on. And so now they've just got to find a way to do that against a Wake Forest team that is going in the opposite direction of Syracuse right now. I mean, this Wake Forest team has won the last three straight games after losing the first two. So I think they finally have some momentum and have people realizing that, hey, we're a good team in the ACC too. And it's so interesting with Wake Forest, Pat, because I feel like a lot of times they're this team that, you know, we know how much they lost last year, especially on the offensive side of the ball, and who is this team going to be, and the job that Dave Clawson has done there and continues to do to continuously have this team be able to have the product that they do on the field, I just think is really impressive. So I'm looking forward to seeing this matchup tomorrow. I know it's a Syracuse team that is really hungry and feels like they have a little bit of momentum despite a loss to Clemson, just because there were so many good things that they could take away. And a Wake Forest team that, you know, still wants more people to know, hey, you can talk about Wake Forest. We're in the mix for the ACC too.
Kelsey, an interesting sidebar to this whole thing is that Wake just doesn't turn the ball over. I mean, they never turn the ball over. One pick the whole season. And the flip side is Syracuse always gets their hands on the ball. I mean, both of these teams have been able to have been fantastic from a turnover standpoint. So really, in some respects, it seems like something's got to give in this game tomorrow.
Yeah, and Syracuse forces a ton of turnovers too. I think that they're both in top 10 in turnover margins, so it's going to be really interesting. I talked to Sam Hartman yesterday, and like you said, I mean, Wake Forest has one turnover all year. That's it. They do a really good job of taking care of the ball, and Sam Hartman doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's very cautious. He doesn't have a lot of rushing yards because he does take care of the ball. But Syracuse, on the other hand, is a team that forces a ton of turnovers. And so I agree. I think there's going to be something between these two teams where it's got to give. I'm trying to think if Sam mentioned it, but, you know, obviously, Pac, there's not a whole lot when it comes to streaks and what they're doing. All these guys have, hey, it's a game-by-game basis, and they're just focused on, you know, what they're doing this week. And so for Sam Hartman, it's continuing to try and lead this team and to take care of the ball.
You know, Syracuse has had success against the Deacs. They've beaten them 6 of the last 9. But you mentioned the momentum Wake has with their program. When you go ahead and knock off Virginia and Virginia Tech these back-to-back weeks, you get a sense that the Deacs have kind of found their stride here.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that. I think that they also feel like there's more still that they can prove. I mean, all of these teams aren't going to listen to all of the outside voices, but this is a Wake Forest team that, you know, Dave Clawson has done a really good job with over the last 6-7 years. And I mean, last year before they had the injuries right at the end of the season, they were one of the top teams in the ACC. I'd say we'd had that matchup with Wake Forest and Virginia Tech right before they had a lot of injuries to the wide receiver position, and that changed a lot of things. But Wake was right there in the mix again. And so I think this is a team that has bought into what Dave Clawson is doing. Obviously, their offense is a little bit different, but they run it really well. They know what they're doing, and they have worked really hard to continue to build on last year's success. And I think a lot of that does come down to Sam Hartman and what he's been able to do stepping into that position. You know, I talked to him about his background, Pack, and he's a guy that his senior year of high school, he transferred to a different school to go play quarterback there with Chad Greer, his coach. And he said that he took that experience and knew, okay, I won't know anybody at this school. This is a team, Oceanside, a team in South Carolina that at the time was a new winless program. And he said he thought it would be a good opportunity for him to go down to that school. He didn't know anybody. They weren't established. And to get to know some of the players, to get to know this offense, and to do things differently, because he knew when he went to Wake that there may be a situation one year where he was the quarterback that had to lead the room, that had to step into a role. And so he says he takes a lot of things from that senior year of high school that he can put into place now. And the other interesting thing is, kind of, I don't know that we would get into this, but he's roommates, Pack, with Nick Skiba, and he's just another fantastic kid that I got to talk to. I mean, you look at the consistency that he's been able to have for them. I think he's 6th in the ACC right now with most points, with 49, their kicker. And that's a tough job to have, and he's been consistent for them for a long time. And the two of those guys, their relationship is really cool. And Nick said, you know what, I have confidence in Sam that he's going to be able to go down there and get the ball in the end zone. But it's nice that if they're not able to finish off that drive, then hey, you've got your roommate that has your back, and you have faith in him too. So I think that this is going to be a good matchup, and I'm excited to see not just what Wake does in this game, Pack, but going forward, because I do think that they have the potential to be a really good team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. By the way, do we know about Taj Harris? Is he good to go this week or not?
We don't know. We asked Dino about it, and he said for now they just are going to continue to keep that in the family, and that will be a decision that we find out on Saturday, I'm sure probably about 11:55, right before everything comes to fruition at noon for the kickoff.
By the way, I couldn't help but notice the accumulation during this interview. Maybe maybe 1/8 of an inch, and given your ties to North and South Carolina, as you well know, if we had a blizzard, and I do use the term blizzard, like the one that you're currently going through right there in Connecticut, you know as well as I do that every grocery store would be out of bread, milk, water, eggs, right? I mean, so you've got those Carolina roots, so are you going to be okay with that, that major accumulation?
Yeah, they don't do that here. People think that this is fine, like this. I don't know how much you can. This is not fine. There is a lot of snow on the ground right now. I'm not a weather person. That was the one thing that when I was in local news that I never got to do. Sorry, now I messed this up, Pack. But Yeah, there's still bread here. There's still water. I'm sure that in a second, you're probably going to see somebody walking their dog, pretending like it's not a big deal that it's snowing. You said an eighth of an inch. I would say it feels to me like 5 inches already. But I feel like this is just what happens. You know, they say come on Packer and Durham, and I'm like, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden it is snowing and we needed something to talk about. I would take this over a squirrel any day.
Kelsey, let me tell you something. I saw you enough on local news here in Charlotte that if there was a snowflake within 200 miles of Charlotte, we would have salt. We'd be salting the roads. You couldn't find anything in any grocery store. We hit the panic button down here in the South. So, you know, you've gotten old school up there in the Northeast. And it's like, no big deal. I'm rolling with the punches now.
I mean, I did the whole, like, walk outside this morning to, like, open the back door and see and brave the winter. And then I quickly closed the door and came right back inside and posted about how it was snowing here and complained about it because that's what I do, Pack. I identify the problem and then I put it out there on social media because life's not perfect.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right, before we let you go, we've been having fun today with everybody. Given the fact that tomorrow is Halloween, and by the way, the clocks go back an hour, Kelsey. Remember that as you're coming back from Syracuse. We fall back this week.
I literally, that had not even crossed my mind. That was not on the radar. So right.
Just
I want to
let you know.
You.
All right. All right. We're going to go with Halloween candies. All right. We need your top three Halloween candies before we let you go.
This is hard because I really love candy, but I'm going to go Butterfinger. I'm going to go Skittles. And I'm going to go Reese's because I really like chocolate. So the Skittles, you know, they kind of break up the chocolate mix. If there's a bowl of candy and I see a Butterfinger in there, I'm going to be most excited to find that. Then the Skittles. I feel like there's always a lot of Skittles that you can choose from in Halloween candy. So you're probably going to be able to grab that. But also if there's a Reese's that's hanging in there, then that's usually good. Pac, when they asked me about this, I threw out my top three. And then I very quickly just volunteered the fact that A, candy corn is not good. B, Whoppers are terrible. And I know Wes isn't with us now, but I heard that Wes is a Whoppers guy, and I'm really disappointed.
Yeah, not only was Whoppers on his list, it was number one on his list. And then he gave me... I don't know. That's my partner. But then he gave us a...
It's like a chocolate-covered cotton ball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good.
Yeah, then he gave us a Chico stick. Chico stick was in his top three, whatever that is.
I was going to say, I don't even know what that is. Is that like a pixie stick?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't even want to go. I don't even want to tell you what's in it. I'm just going to leave it alone. I'm going to leave it alone.
It can't be worse than a Whopper. No way.
Well, I mean, Whopper's won, according to my partner, so that's what we got going on. Listen, I want you to be careful driving up there to Syracuse, all right? And congrats on the Sports Center gig this week. That was very cool. And keep rocking and rolling here on ACC Network.
Thanks, Pack. I appreciate it. That was fun.
Be good. In the snow. Snowy Connecticut. Kelsey Riggs taking care of business. And again, Wake Forest and Syracuse. All right? Wake and Syracuse. The Deacs got momentum. Syracuse, I thought, played extremely well last week. We'll see how that plays out.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of what has been a very eventful week. And to get you ready for the weekend, what better than to look at the Bojangles weekend menu? And there's nothing better, right? Bojangles. Matter of fact, I could go for one right now as we speak. So here's what we got going on the football weekend. As I just told you, we got Wake Forest at Syracuse, noon Eastern time. Virginia Tech, Louisville follows up at 4. Your primetime game, Geico all over it, North Carolina, Virginia. South's oldest rivalry, 125 years in the making. Women's sports on Sunday. You got Wake Forest, BC, and field hockey at noon. Duke at Miami, soccer at 3:30. Notre Dame at North Carolina, soccer as well at 5:30. And all that will be outstanding. So there it is, your Bojangles weekend menu right here on ACC Network. All right. I believe we have found somewhere back unfrozen in Cartersville, Georgia, our partner. I think what he did is he left us last hour to go jump on his Chico sticks that he's got stashed out there in the back with Clifford. He's got the is that the ATL hat on now that you guys finally found a win last night? Is that what that is? There it is. ATL.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
So apparently we got power out on the porch, right? We're good to go on that?
I wouldn't say we have power. We have cell service. How's that? I'm not going to claim that this is the greatest video that Packer and Durham has ever seen, but we are on the back deck here in Cartersville, Georgia, and this is about 2020 in a capsule right now. That's all I'm going to tell you. 2020 has hit Packer and Durham finally.
Well, I think it's hit us for about 7 months. But again, nothing's safe and nothing's easy. When you try to do live television, crazy stuff happens during a pandemic. Hey, crazy stuff happens, period. And you found that out last night with Trevor Lawrence testing positive for COVID-19, which really, in some respects, is kind of like the perfect snapshot of the college football season. You know, everybody's been trying to deal with COVID in one shape, way, or form. Doesn't matter who you are. You could be the face of the sport like Trevor Lawrence. You could be a league. You could be a team. Nobody's safe from the virus, Wes. Nobody.
That's right. That's exactly right. By the way, before we say goodbye on the Friday, let me thank all those that have reached out, Pac, to touch base with me about the greatness of Chico Stick.
Good. You know what? They can have mine. How about that? Chico Stick. Who would have ever thunk?
In fact, let me especially thank Clemson basketball forward Amir Sims, who wants you to know Chico Sticks are amazing and highly forgotten about in this world. Thank you, Amir. And Eric McLean, I saw you put the laugh emoji up there too. Chico Sticks. Hey, by the way, I can see a box of those sitting on the set soon, just so you know.
No, that'd be on your set. On your set.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not going to say anything bad, but I'm not sure Chester and Fuller even want a Chico Stick. But I'm going to let you have all of mine. I'll let you have the. You and Clifford can hoard all the Chico Sticks. By the way, before we get to other staff listings here of our goofy Halloween candy deal, before we get out of here for the weekend, Kelsey Riggs not happy with the Whopper call. Kelsey Riggs absolutely woodshedded the Whopper.
It's okay. She's also in, what, about a half foot of snow right now in Connecticut going to Syracuse? Yeah. Yeah. Good luck, Kelsey. Drive safely.
All right. Let's go through some staff selections here because everybody came up with their respective list regarding the infamous candy. So here we go. Our buddies, the Lumberjacks, Drew goes Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which is number one. Kit Kat and Smarties. A first mention of Smarties this week.
Smarties. It's been a while for Smarties, by the way. It's been a while.
Says the
it
Chico
really
Stick
has been a while.
Spokesperson. Yeah. Josh goes Snickers, a traditional no-brainer. Baby Ruth, first mentioned there. Kit Kat getting a lot of love on that front.
Yeah.
Meg, who, by the way, makes her own peanut butter, goes Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. She goes Take Five. That's the first mention of a Take Five. And same goes with Gummy Bears, which I'm surprised hasn't been mentioned more. And our man Lewis, who's somehow keeping you on the air down there in beautiful Cartersville, goes Snickers, the underrated Jolly Ranchers, and
very
old
underrated
school Tootsie Rolls. And I mean old school.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.